one?
The hymn tune. I see. It's he used a well-known.
Yeah, Christmas it was a very, very well-known, very ancient tone, Christmas song that was used there.
I see. When Eric made a suite from these numbers, did he ever talk about the logic or the thought process by which he connected them? Because I noticed that he does not reproduce the movements in their original order as a rule. He
very often there was is a certain balance, right? Mm-hmm. That slow and fast, or loud and soft, and so on, should alternate, I think.
Right.
I mean, it is just aesthetics that work when he gathered the pieces, you know, mm-hmm. in which order they were to be, to give contrast, or, you know.
Uh-huh. And would you say that his reason for reorchestrating was to have a larger, more effective orchestral palette than what might have been available to him in the
I think the original dramatic setting, he had an orchestra there because the mm-hmm. Full orchestra was there.
Uh-huh.
And some pieces used it already and some when he didn't want to use it. But it was at his disposal. It was rather maybe the other way around, that mm-hmm. the suite was this particular man who conducted this band, or whatever you would call it, that played on the radio,
mm-hmm.
I think was a student of Eric.
Oh.
He was an older man, but was at that time studying harmony. Mm-hmm. You know, I told you, along with the children, he always had some students that were, you know, musicians.
Wanted to be.
And so he was befriended with Eric, and he said, I could use a piece, and for this, Eric did it.
Mm-hmm.
There was also an interlude there that Eric had the song of the fairies, of the elfin.
Oh, yes. You know?
And it was to be danced, and the ballet master refused to do it because it was not like Mendelssohn, these little tiptoeing elves in Mendelssohn, that was rather a soft, slow movement. You know, it was like you would see in the woods when these evening dew clouds would gather on the meadows, and it was this kind of feeling.
Oh.
It is a very beautiful piece, in my opinion. But he refused, but could. Was a very great friend of Eric and loved his music, and he fought it through, and he went with him with the piece, and the ballet director who refused and had Eric play it to the final director somewhere.
I
it
see.
Was decided that it was a good piece, and so he had to adapt himself.
I see.
But there was always, whenever Eric, there was a situation, there was always somebody around who mm-hmm. said no to something.
I see.
And there was always fight. It was just characteristic of Eric's.
In 1934, we've talked in general terms already about the wealth of criticism, the variety of readerships, and the large number of critics functioning in Vienna. But in 1934, we see a specific critic at work who is still very much with us in Los Angeles now, Paul Pisk. And he wrote something rather significant in Radio Wien. Perhaps you can talk a little bit about the scope of this magazine and...
Well, that was a weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And it was had a rather high level, I must say. It was available every week to the general public, but the level of these papers, even the smaller ones, is really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And how much... how seriously art and music were taken,
mm-hmm.
and how much part they were of the general public.
Yes.
In contrast to here, where it's still something, you know, the general public is not interested. It was the baseball of Vienna.
I mean, the
mm-hmm. public was, you know, the everyday person was interested in it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Eric was allowed to go to whoever he wanted to have the piece discussed,
mm-hmm.
and he Fiske had at several occasions given very good reviews.
Yes.
Of